You're listening to Cards to the Moon, a podcast about trading cards from both a collector and investor perspective. We hope you'll stick around for the ride as we take a deep dive into the state of the hobby, share some hot takes, hopefully some useful advice and fun stories along the way. Hey guys, welcome back to Cards to the Moon. This is episode 195, and my name is Clark from 5cardguys.com and 5cardguys on Instagram. Co-hosting with me, as usual, is Hyung of Integrity Sports Cards and John, who is TradeView at Recess. All right, off the top today, we just heard, as of this recording, right before this recording actually, some good news finally for Panini America this time, and because they announced that they secured a multi-year trading card partnership with LIV Golf. And here's a blurb from the LIV Golf website on what you can expect from the deal, all right? So, quote, it says, Panini's inaugural line of golf products will include physical trading cards featuring match-worn memorabilia and authentic autographs from LIV Golf players. Panini plans to introduce the first LIV Golf trading cards with its popular Prism and Impeccable brands. In addition, Panini will launch a LIV Golf Panini Instant Card program where real-time cards will be released after tournaments highlighting some of the winning moments and memorable shots throughout the season, as well as LIV Golf team sets, end quote. So that Panini Instant kind of sounds like a Topps Now kind of thing, right? So yeah, what do you guys think? Would you pick up some of these Panini LIV Golf cards when they come out? I know you guys are golfers. I'm not. That's a good question, yeah, Clark. I'm curious to see if...
I am a golfer, but I don't know if I'm a golf collector. But if I were a golf collector, I guess it depends on who's in this set. Like, who are we talking? Like, I guess... Liv has Phil Mickelson. I guess that's a big name, so he would be a decent. Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau. So there is a bit of collectability, I think, in it. Like, I think it would be cool to see what they come up with. And Prism's just treading water right now. They're just throwing, they're treading water and trying to run a sports card company right now. They're just, you know, doing whatever they can to stay afloat. And yeah, I just feel like I don't think it's going to be a mass, like, it brings value to Panini, obviously. And that's what they're trying to do, is still be relevant, still be valuable, because, you know, LIV Golf is a, you know, PGA's competition. So I think it's something that potentially can work out, because LIV is different than PGA. So we don't know what, you know, PGA was limited to with, you know, golf cards in the past. So, you know, I'm interested to see how this pans out, to be honest. I'm not totally dismissing it, but it is Prism Golf. I don't know what to think about it, to be honest. Not super excited is what I'm saying. Like, I'm not like, I got to get a box. Not yet.
Doesn't PGA and LIV, weren't they supposed to merge? What, I don't know what the latest is on that.
Not too they sure. Did,
they did, I think they did unofficially or officially merged, but I don't know how. I don't know how that works. Yeah, it's quite confusing. Anyways, you know, the news first came out, a part of me was excited. I do like golf. I'm a decent. You know, I'm not a golf card fan, but I think I would buy a blaster for fun. I think it would be jokes, but. You know, the more I think about it, and at first, I didn't know, is it the Panini Instance, right, you said?
Yeah.
I didn't know about that. I think overall, now that I'm thinking about it a little bit more, it's probably going to be pretty underwhelming, to be honest. There's a bunch of notable names missing. And by notable names, I mean one name, Tiger Woods.
Right.
So, you know, Tiger Woods is really, he's the guy, you know, maybe Rory's second, but Tiger Woods is the guy in terms of collectability in the sports card space. I do think that the Prism brand itself could carry people to want to rip it for fun, you know, when it initially launches. I think the Prism, the brand Prism alone is still pretty, it's still pretty powerful, as much as we knock on it and harp on it all we want. Like, look how much better it did versus Topps Chrome UFC. Like the people love seeing that prism, you know, sure, WWE yeah. prism versus Topps Chrome prism. I'm sure the prices are wildly different in prism's favor. So the prism brand is still very, very strong. So I think it'll have a decent spark and run when it first comes out. But things like Panini Instant, I think that's going to be super underwhelming. Like who watches Liv? Like Hyung, do you watch Liv Golf? Like I've never watched Liv Golf.
Just the highlights. Yeah. I'm a highlight guy.
I think most even decent golf fans will barely know what had happened over in Liv Golf. So to bring out Panini Instant cards, I think that's going to be, I feel like that's going to be a flop. But the Prism, I think it could be decent.
Prism and Impeccable, right? Impeccable.
Oh, Impeccable. And I guess that's where the like jersey, you know, patch autos right. will come out.
I'm sure very similar to basketball, right? So, right. Yeah, I mean, I'm not... Obviously, don't know how it's going to play out because I'm not a huge golf card collector. I'm not a golf card collector at all. But at the same time, I feel like this is a smart move by Panini, right? Like this is the kind of move that you kind of have to make when your like backs are against the wall at this point. Like what other bigger leagues or notable leagues can we make a deal with? And LIV Golf, I think, falls under that category. So smart play by Panini. Whether it works or not, we'll find out. But I feel like this is one of those plays that they had to make. And they got to look for more deals like this, especially in come 2020, 2025 and 2026 when they lose the NBA and NFL licenses as well. So smart play. But whether it's successful, that's another question entirely. All right, let's move on now to hobby headlines. Okay, so I just came upon this Forbes article, which was actually published in December, so it's a couple months ago, but I thought it was really interesting because it was an interview with Ryan Hogue, who is the president of PSA, and I believe he just was recently installed as the president of PSA. So the article headline says, how PSA built an industry leader around grading and authentication, end quote. If Will was here, I'm sure he would have a lot to say about PSA. But, you know, I really wanted to do this exercise kind of like we did a couple of episodes ago when we talked about that New York Times article featuring Michael Rubin and just kind of going through some of the main quotes from the article. So we'll do the same thing here and then kind of react to it, you know, what we think about it, if we agree or disagree with some of the quotes by Ryan Hogue. Okay, so first quote, it says, several factors have shaped the current stage in the trading card business. The first significant shift occurred with eBay entering the scene in the mid to late 90s, enabling buying and selling without physical possession. This opened up new possibilities, but also introduced challenges regarding confidence in transactions. Third-party grading, like PSA, emerged as a valuable addition to the collecting industry, providing assurance about an item's condition and bringing additional liquidity to the hobby. That's a quote from Ryan Hogue. Agree with that statement?
Just how everything played out? 100%. Absolutely. Like there's definitely a demand for it. Like I would want it authenticated regardless. So, you know, if a third party authenticator at the time when, you know, they remember PSA is a fairly young company, I believe 1991.
That's right.
So for them to see the opportunity and have that long-term strategy, obviously they couldn't forecast what was going to happen in 2020. But, you know, at the end of the day, they've been around for the last 30 plus years, 40 years, you know, or I guess it would be 30 plus years. And they've been, yeah, doing the right moves. And, you know, Ryan Hogue is one of those presidents that is a hobbyist, you know, like yep. Nat Turner. Yep. So, you know, I really respect his input on that because he was there, I believe, for a long time with PSA. So he's seen it grow. I know, you know, part of it, like investing in kind of like the growth of internal technology was mm-hmm. something that, you know, he always foreseen as like important, but you know, they didn't have it at the time. So now that, you know, the hobby's where it is today, it makes total sense that this was the kind of like the growing pains that they kind of went through. And there was yeah. a demand as internet emerged, you know, marketplaces like eBay came up. Mm-hmm. It was like an opportunity that they've seen and capitalized on, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah, inevitable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the concept totally makes sense. I mean, you know, you guys know the type of collector I was. Right into sleeve and top loader. I loved
right.
knowing whether mine was mint or not. And then to eventually find out, to hear that there are professionals that grade set products, even in the comic book and VHS or whatever. The fact that there's some professional, you know, Will will laugh at the word professional, and same with Young maybe, but supposed professionals are determining whether, you know, a certain item is in a certain condition. I think that concept was genius, especially in the collectible space. So to see where they've gotten, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly how he played out. He was answering the question from the reporter and he was just kind of providing context, right? So this is exactly how it played out. But for me, it's always strange still, like how it was eBay that kind of became the primary marketplace, because eBay didn't start out to be a trading card platform. They're like, right, you know, right. What's in my basement? I want to sell this, you know, pants that I only wore once, like, you know, just random things. And then for some reason, card collectors, like the OGs, said like, oh, hey, why don't we just use this thing called eBay to sell, buy and sell? And here we are still using eBay primarily. I know there's other marketplaces now, but still eBay is still the dominant marketplace for trading cards, right? So mm-hmm. Just funny how things played out. And I think I just saw on our hobby friend Denny, he posted something recently about eBay increasing their fees a little bit.
Crazy. So
another thing to think about when you're buying and selling, maybe this will increase competition from other platforms taking advantage of that, but we'll see. Okay, here's a second quote from Ryan Hoag. Upon delving into the operations, I saw a company with immense potential for innovation, talking about PSA. The previous 15 years had seen limited technology investment, and the team operated with constrained budgets. Do you agree with that in terms of PSA being one of those companies that just kind of no movement for 15 years and then boom?
Oh, 100%. You could tell by their kind of like old labels and where they were. And it's what I was saying is in the 90s, it wasn't the company, you know, to like Beckett was, BGS was, mm-hmm. you know, big, SGC was, you know, hot in the vintage market. So like, we're talking a very, very young company at the time. And yeah, they lacked a lot of resources. It's only, I guess, more recent that, you know, they literally blew up. So for me, it's like they're seeing the fruit of their labor of, you know, patiently waiting and, you know, making the right moves at the right time. But then I would imagine in the 90s, they were a small company just keeping up with just getting people's slabs graded. And, you know, their probably operations were the number one concern of just getting them out in a proper fashion, right?
Exactly.
I don't know the story, but I'm curious to know, you know, when BGS came in later on, how hard they stomped on PSA and SGC, who had been around. I wonder how quickly they gained market share, because BGS was by far the foremost authority in pricing, right? Mm-hmm. To have them come in as a grading company, I'm sure shook things up pretty bad. Am I wrong? They came in afterwards, right? No?
Who's
it was
that?
SGC first. SGC has been around the longest, the right?
I think I would think that PSA is the youngest out of the three.
Also, BGS was around before.
1984.
BGS?
Sorry, that was Beckett.
Beckett was 84. PSA is 91.
Okay, so it says they expanded to open Beckett grading services in 1999. So you're right, John, after PSA offered the grading service. Yeah. So Beckett was around a lot longer with their magazines. We all know that, right? But yeah, in terms of the grading services, they came later. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I'm just curious. Let's look back at 99. I'm wondering how much of a dent BGS made coming in right off the hop.
I'm sure they made some. I mean, like for baseball cards, like I still, you know, anyone that listens to this podcast, I still prefer BGS graded slabs for my Bowman Chrome, you know, mm-hmm. anything autograph cards. I like the metal plate. I think it looks better. I was actually, this is a plug for this betting podcast I was on recently. I don't think the episode is on where I was a guest, but one of the questions they asked me was like, which slabs do you prefer? And I was a Beckett loyalist. I still am a Beckett loyalist. And then I'm like, I know people are not going to like that answer, but and you know, I also acknowledge that PSA gives you the greatest market value in terms of ROI still, right? But in terms of the look of it, and you know, Beckett's still my favorite. But yeah, I don't know. You know, we talk about it all the time. They might have made a dent initially, but they squandered any other opportunity after that to take over. PSA just kind of took off. So, all right, let's go on to the next quote. He says, my initial challenge and source of excitement were rooted in the realization that Nat Turner, who is the CEO of Collectors, which PSA is under the umbrella of, that Nat was willing to fund the growth and technology investment needed for innovation. Alongside my CTO counterpart, we grew the product and technology organization from around 30 people in mid-2021 to over 160 people today. This involved rapid hiring, identifying problem areas, and investing resources to bring new innovative solutions to market, end quote.
He's talking like a CEO, a president. He's talking like, you know, his role, he's doing his role exactly the way he needs to, right? He has to look at it as, you know, where they need to invest and where, like, with businesses, the number one thing with, you know, scalability, the sales are the easy part, you know, it's scalability, internal operations is probably one of the toughest things that you could kind of implement, manage, and make sure that, you know, you're providing the proper leadership within an organization, right? So for me, it's like, he's talking like a CEO, he knows exactly what he's talking about. And yeah, everything he says is pretty logical to me, at least, like, kind of like, yeah, right on. Like, it gives me more, you know, confidence that, you know, you have someone in the PSA driver's seat that kind of knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, I agree.
That's cool. Yeah.
I mean, he's answering, like Hyung said, he's answering it the right way. But let's not forget, it was that period, it was a pretty big fiasco for PSA. I don't think they, like, grew the product from 30 to 100. They were forced to move as quickly as possible because it was probably insane. Their warehouse was probably,
the sales, like, came automatically.
Boxes and boxes of boxes, unlimited submissions of cards, right? So they were probably completely overwhelmed. So I think Nat coming in, providing the funds, you know, the capital investments to be able to, for them to scale up properly was probably a lifesaver for PSA. So,
yeah, that's a good point, John. Like, they're more forced to adapt and grow quickly. That's for sure. It is mind blowing to me when I read this quote that in mid 2021, which is the hype of the hobby during COVID, there's only 30 people in that product and technology organization. Can you imagine those 30 people just going out of their minds? It's like, what are we doing?
Losing it. Yeah. I was thinking the same thing.
Like, I'm going to look for another job. That's what I'd probably be thinking about, one of the original 30 people. You know, people upset at you. They're like, when am I going to get my cards back?
Yeah.
Where's the bottleneck? Oh, man. That's hilarious. But yeah, I'm glad they were wise to this, and now it's 160 people. So, and I'm probably still hiring. Okay, this is kind of interesting. So it was a long paragraph, so I'll just provide you quick context. He's talking about how players are getting involved in terms of promoting the PSA brand and just promoting the hobby in general. And he mentions Mike Trout, who's kind of essentially a PSA ambassador now, as well as Bobby Wood Jr., same thing, right? So, and then, you know, they're leveraging their celebrity, their social media presence to their benefit. So this is what he says, quote, with their active presence on social media, athletes share their passions and interests, contributing to the hobby's growing popularity. Moreover, there are many more active collectors among athletes that the public may not be aware of. keeping a few names under wraps for now.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. It's yeah, but it's for me, it's kind of like what we always talk about. It's like, you know, everybody's on board with even like the Michael Rubin strategy of getting eyes on it.
Right.
You know, getting the people that, you know, we have relationships with. It's more than just, you know, oh, we're grading cards for Mike Trout, or like, you know, it's like, no, they're having involvement. They're doing marketing campaigns, you know, and that's not just PSA. That's like Fanatics, obviously, you know, is doing it big time with their marketing department. But
yeah,
that's the evolution of the technology that we talk about, the basic technology of the internet. It's a form of communication that, you know, we never had 20 plus years of this high speed where we could sell stuff. We could upload images in a heartbeat, high quality images. We could load it to Instagram. We could do all these things on social media. This is the whole point of, you know, staying communicated. And yeah, like to them, they're playing the game right. And yeah, from my standpoint, they know exactly what they're doing. Like they have the right people in place to implement these, to maximize their exposure. And at the end of the day, it's the same thing we said about Fanatics. It's like when you don't necessarily have to always monetize off your direct marketing campaigns.
Right.
There's more value in brand recognition if millions and millions of people see your brand. And it goes hand in hand with the way they're converting in terms of their revenue and sales, right? So
yeah
I think it's almost fun looking at it, watching it from, I guess, my point of view, because, you know, me personally, I run a business, and, you know, we talk about scaling, we talk about, you know, right. Marketplaces, we talk about all these things that we could draw parallels to. So, you know, I see it very, I guess, transparently at this point. But yeah, I think they're doing a fabulous job.
Yeah, good points.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to play devil's advocate here, and I'm trying to pick apart the article as best I can. I mean, you know, I'll try to do a favor for Will, because I'm sure Will is going to be listening to this and just going to be shaking his hands. You know, PSA, I feel like PSA is similar to Topps and the rest of the industry, where they just didn't spend any money on marketing and any of this stuff. And they just kind of fell ass backwards into this giant success. And I think with the emergence of, you know, SGC really pushing hard, and some new players, CGC coming in, BGS, not so much, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But it's really making PSA, forcing their hand, even though PSA now, in terms of value and brand value, they're killing it. Like they're just, and, you know, not giving them all the credit in the world. I do feel like their brand value kind of, they almost fell a little ass backwards into the brand value. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't think they should just sit idly by and just, you know, take the lazy route and let other competitors catch up. So I think they do need to innovate. They need to continue pour marketing and all that stuff to make sure that they stay on top, right? It kind of reminds me of, you know, like 10, 15 years ago, you know, when we were younger, when Honda Civics were all the rage. Like Honda was huge 10, 15 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Me and you had one, remember, Johnny?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Good times. But you walk into a Honda dealership, right? Like if you, at that time, you walk into a Hyundai dealership, and like Hyundai is big now. It's gotten big.
Right.
But back in the day, they're small. And you walk into a dealership, and the moment you walk into Hyundai, there's like 10 people all over you. Hey, how's it going? Like, you want a coffee? They're trying their best to lure you in. Whereas Honda, I remember walking in, and I don't think anybody talked to me for like 45 minutes. And they just had this like arrogance about it, because they knew. Like, I walked in, I'm buying a Honda. Like, they didn't have to.
Don't buy a Civic.
They didn't have to try, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's where PSA sat for the last 2-3 years. They don't have to try, and they're just making sales, right? So I'm hoping that this added level of competition and all of this stuff really forces their hand to really innovate, you know, like really, because they still have a lot to change. I think there's a lot of people that still have huge complaints about their customer service. Mm-hmm. You know, whenever you read forums, even lately, it's any issue with PSA, it's like, well, you try to talk to them and they go, well, it's kind of like a too bad, so sad. You know, most of the answers to customer service was, oh, you got this or you got that. Or, you know, Will's like, oh, I got mislabeled cars. It's kind of like a too bad, so sad, right? So
yeah,
I think all of this competition stuff is really, I'm hoping, I mean, for the betterment of the card community and all of that stuff, I think it'll push PSA to become a better company overall for everybody. So yeah.
It's a good point. Like, you know, tying back to the initial quote about getting athletes to be their ambassadors, it doesn't really matter if your service is horrible at the end of the day. And right. then, you know, if it stays in a place where, you know, the regular customers are pissed off, you know, do you envision Mike Trout and Bobby Witt still being with PSA? They don't want to be associated with a bad brand at the end of the day. So hopefully you're right, John, like that PSA has learned lessons from the past. But going back to what, you know, what they're doing now in terms of marketing strategy, it's such a no-brainer to leverage the millions of followers that some of these athletes have. You know, for me, it's like they should have done it way sooner, right?
And
now, now they're just getting around to it. So it'll be interesting. You know, he kind of teased, he's keeping a few names under wraps for now. So it'll be interesting to see who else they have on board in terms of being a brand ambassador for PSA. It does remind me of the Topps / Fanatics playbook in terms of how they're marketing things, right? Like off air, Hyung, I was talking to you about Topps Spot. You know, I think it's their second year that Fanatics / Topps has created a place where guys that are in the Cactus League right now in spring training, they could just come to this mansion. It's essentially a mansion with like a pool and the lounge area, and all these MLB players are just, they just go there and then they can sign cards there. And for every player, I was reading further into it, for every player, there's a Topps representative that's there to witness autographs. So just kind of killing two birds with one stone, you know? And then, you know, once they're finished signing, they could go get a cocktail. They could do whatever they want. Play mini golf. I think it's on site as well. And then they create content as well while they're there. It just makes total sense for them to do that. So, you know, just leveraging athletes to promote their brand, no brainer. Okay, last quote from this article, and this is Ryan Hoag again. He says the key is to focus on the core essence of collecting. Fun. At PSA, we've introduced initiatives like our set registry, providing a platform for collectors to compete, build, and connect. This not only fosters a sense of community, but also adds an enjoyable dimension beyond the speculative nature of the market. End quote.
So can you rephrase that? What is he talking about there?
I'll provide a little more context. Okay. I think the reporter was suggesting that it's got to be more than just like providing market value, like for the cards, right? It's got to be, you know, you got to keep the collectors entertained. It's got to be about fun in terms of collecting cards. And then he talks about set registry and things like that beyond, quote, the speculative nature of the market, which is, you know, a lot of investor types do, right? They submit it to PSA because they want maximum return on value, you know, on their investment.
Yeah, I think stuff like, you know, the scanning images now within their database, like little stuff, improvements like that will definitely, you know, it's definitely in the right direction. But yeah, I'm not a big fan of the registry, to be honest. Every time, and I always do it through certification, like PSA certification, rather than looking up for through their PSA pop report, for instance. Right. Like it seems like a very outdated system in terms of, you know, how you have to find. Like I was on the PSA pop report today on 2019 Topps, just a set. I want to see how many cards, like, you know, Soto's rookie cup was graded in terms of the numbered cards, and it took me forever to find the
it's not good.
Like pages. Yeah, and then it's like I would have to search Topps again, and then it would have to, you know, like it's just. I think they have a lot of improvement there, and it's kind of like using what they built off of. I would imagine building that big of a database is so much information. So it's like they never really innovated on that end. So I think there's a lot of room for growth in terms of that user experience. I like the PSA like certification number. You pop it in there and then you get the image of the card. You know exactly, you know,
that's cool, yeah.
Right there. So like stuff like that is good in the right direction. But yeah, I don't think they could be too innovative with stuff like that. I guess if they just focus on, you know, creating great marketing, but then also on the flip side, provide, you know, that good user experience where, you know, they keep on investing in, you know, the customer user experience.
Yeah.
That answer about set registry, I think the question you're, I'm trying to remember, Clark, it was around community and you know, having going fun. Beyond just grading.
Yeah.
And, oh yeah. And having fun, who uses set registry? Like that's so, it's so old. I think pre COVID, you know, early 2000s, mid 2000s, when not, you know, hundreds of thousands of cards were being graded. I think there were a lot of people that used set registry because you were collecting PSA cards and it was nice. I think the set registry has a way of like, you can look up other set registered people that might have cards that you need. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you can contact them. I've tried it, but ever since I first got it originally, I stopped using it because I think the new age of collecting, everybody's almost a hybrid collector at this point, right? Everybody's investing, collecting, flipping really quickly. There's no time to, I'm pretty sure set registry, like nobody uses set registry anymore, except for people who used it back in the day, right? So the answer was kind of, you know, it kind of exposes PSA. Like you guys, pretty much the answer is you guys haven't done anything. Like set registry, come on. Like that's not a real answer. So I think that, and I'm not faulting them. I'm not trying to really hammer them. Because listen, they had 30 employees grading 100,000 cards per day. Like they had no time to do marketing. They had no time to think about the community. They had no time for nothing.
Yeah.
But now they have resources. They have people. They have the time. So I think now that is where they start to step up in these sorts of areas where they are exposed. So
yeah. Hopefully, yeah. My thoughts are more general than what you guys mentioned. I think PSA is really just going to be about flipping. You know, like it delivers the greatest ROI. I think the majority of people that submit to PSA, you know, I'm sure there's going to be a few that like the PSA slab and they don't care what the grade is. But for the most part, people want a 10 or a 9 so that they could sell, right?
Yes.
Because if I want it for the PC, I'm going to go with SGC or like a grading company that it's just cheaper. Like until PSA, if they really want to make collecting fun and they want their slabs to be involved in this, you know, creating a fun experience for collectors, they got to lower their prices a lot.
Clark, I will say this. I know you're a BGS fan.
Yeah.
But PSA slabs, the card looks way better just in general. Just in general. I'm just going to throw that
man.
Out. And my proof is I cracked the Max Verstappen BGS 8.5.
Yeah.
And it just didn't do the card justice. Especially when I cracked it, I was like, wow, this raw, I want to keep it raw. I put in a PSA slab and boom, it was like a halo just appeared on top of that card, right? So for me, I'm just saying, just throw it out there. I know you're a BGS fan.
I think it's the BGS sleeve. Some people. I think it's the penny sleeve that's inside the BGS.
It's just thick.
It creates like an extra layer of haze on the card.
Yeah, yeah. I think paper looks okay. Chrome cards just don't do it justice. Just throwing it out there.
So I
Clark's flustered.
I got to take a break, guys. Hold on. No, I get it. If you really prefer the look of the PSA, then sure. But I still think most people do it to flip or try to get some kind of maximum value out of it. Because if you really want to go there, like I think the CG slabs are, like I hear they're better. Or probably even tag grading. right? Like, I would love to go tag grading if I want PC. Like, it looks amazing.
Right. But it's kind of like marketing, though. I believe that's why PSA wins. It's not necessarily the flip. It's just the consciousness of every, like, for me, I'm just like, it looks right in a PSA slab. And then it's just like, that's my conscious decision right away. And that's where I feel like that's where the programming marketing kind of comes into play, where PSA does a far better job. Like, it's kind of you wear this sneakers or whatever that is in style, but then in reality it's like, man, why am I wearing these? These are ugly. Like, they're not. But then you just follow the trend that kind of like pops, right? So I feel like that there's a part of that too where, you know, people don't know why they're rocking PSA, but they just do, right? Like, it's just a known thing to do.
100%. Brand power. PSA has built dominance, right? That's the power of marketing and the power of branding, right? You know, like, if you love a pair of, you know, going back to sneakers or clothing, you love the look of a certain sneaker, objectively, you're like, man, those look hot. And then they're a pair of Reeboks for $50. Mm-hmm. You're still going to buy you're going to buy the uglier one that happens to be Nike because it's Nike. Like, you're just going to buy it. You're not going to buy the one you objectively like better because it's Reebok. Like, that's how branding works. Like, you just, we're drawn to the power of that brand. And PSA, number one, like Clark said, we're drawn to it because it's going to return the best ROI. But at this point, because I think the ROI and card prices and all of that is so great, that innately in our brain, it's already built in, like, ooh, PSA is the best. It's the one. Even now for my PC, I want PSA. Even though objectively, I for me personally, I think tag grading looks the best objectively. But yeah, I'm still going to, for now, choose PSA. It's just like,
yeah, we just did a PSA submission. I just sent another 12 cards there. It's like, God damn it.
Yeah, I added 6 to that pile too. So I totally agree with you guys. It has to be the power of the brand, because there is no other explanation why people would like, you know, the PSA label, which is just a white piece of paper with the boring red border over a nice modern metal sleek label, okay, of Beckett. Okay, I don't get, you know, why that is, other than the power of the brand. It has to be that. Oh man, it's like, you know, I got the iPhone 15. Oh, it looks amazing, but you guys prefer like that iPhone SE, the plastic colored backs. You know, like, I don't get it. I don't get it.
I was thinking more along the lines of, you know, PSA, you rock like a more modern like hoodie, and then BGS, it's like everybody's rocking like modern stuff. BGS, you're showing in like knight's armor or something, like, it's like, what? You know what I mean?
Oh man, no, I don't like that comparison, but. All right, but let's move on. That was the end of the article. But yeah, no denying PSA is still way ahead of all the other grading companies. So it'll be interesting to see how BGS and SGC and CGC will try to compete with them as the hobby continues to grow. All right, let's go on to our next segment, and it's called Over Under.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, we haven't done this in a while, but this is when I list a few cards and I'll give you a dollar amount and you say whether the last sold price was over or under that amount, okay? And the theme for this segment is, again, 2024 Top Series 1, because it's a big thing that's out right now. So I'm going to give you some of the hits, like the hit cards from 2024 Top Series 1 that recently sold, okay? So first one. The 2024 Top Series 1 Team Color Border Variation. So we talked about the team color, right, with the logos around, of Ellie De La Cruz. It's all red, reds, obviously. It is an SSP. Raw. These are all raw. None of them are really graded yet. $500. Over or under. Last sold for that. Team Wait. Color border variation of LE De La Cruz.
So the border, the team borders are SSPs?
I believe they are, yeah.
Oh, okay.
They're, yeah, they're, I don't know if they're SSP. There's maybe some, SP? What, it'd be, yeah, S, but I think they might be a little more rare than SP.
Okay.
Who knows? I remember there's a lot of parallels.
I think last week Will was mentioning he was hoping that they were, that they would make them SPs or something. So I guess they are.
But they're not numbered. Cool. They're not numbered. But yeah.
They're not numbered, but I think
I think he was saying they should have been numbered.
Man, I would say on release, it would have been more expensive. But I'm saying, man, that's probably where I thought it was.
But that's a lot of sold, right?
I want to say it's over.
Okay.
Me too. It's only been 2 weeks, I think. Yeah, I think that's definitely over.
But I think somebody really overpaid on the first week probably and the second week.
Yeah, it's kind of a trick question because yesterday it sold for $550. It's over. Okay. Or sorry, February 19th, but the day after it sold for $450. So it is under last sold February 20th for $450. Yeah. So that's what you're looking at for. It's a nice looking card, actually. It kind of pops, especially with the red border.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Card number two. You're going to hear a lot of LE De La Cruz because he's obviously the chase in this Top Series 1. 2024 Top Series 1 LE De La Cruz rookie Golden Mirror Variation SSP. The one where I think, you know, he's wearing a helmet. It is the Golden Mirror Variation, which we talked about before. And the number I'm giving you is 750.
That seems kind of expensive. So I would put team variation at probably double that print count.
Mm-hmm.
So 750. I'm going to say higher. It's as crazy as that sounds. Higher than 750.
Okay.
Yeah, if the team variation sold for 500, the SSP gold mirror I think should go for more than that. Not saying these are justified prices. These are obviously inflated.
Yes, right.
Release prices, but I'm going to say the inflated release price is going to be over 750.
You're both correct. 815.
Wow.
Sold February 19th. Yeah. It'll come down, but it did sell for $815. Yeah. All right. Oh, this one, I think this one's a good one. 2024 Top Series 1, Anthony Volpe, Platinum Autograph, 1/1, right? So it's Platinum, which looks gray more like. But it is, and it is the 35th anniversary, so it's, I guess, the 1989 look, but it's a platinum 1/1 card. $1,000.
$1,000. Platinum 1/1? That seems a little low.
Autograph.
On card. Not that it matters.
Is it on card?
It is on card, yes.
I'm going to say...
That seems like a good buy.
Seems like a decent buy. I'm going to say it is an insert auto. So I get it, but like, and in platinum, like nobody likes platinum. It's not the real, it's flat. We should call it flat gray 1/1.
That's so true. Platinum.
Let's say platinum. Yes.
That's a good one.
I'm going to say it had to sell above $1,000.
Okay.
I agree. I'm going above.
You're going above for this beautiful card right here.
That's sick. Sick card.
And just showing on the screen for the guys. It actually sold for $750.
Ooh.
Wow.
That's a deal.
A golden mirror or Anthony Volpe 101? Like,
yeah, crazy. Seriously.
Crazy.
That just goes hobby to show logic. You. Hobby Logic. That's a perfect case of Hobby Logic. Okay, three more. 2024 Top Series 1. There's the heavy lumber series, right? It has that wood grain look. And then there's a Bat Relic autograph of Aaron Judge. All right? So $750.
I'm all about people overpaying these days. Or just in general the last 3 years. So I'm going to say, it's more. What do we say? $750? Yeah. I would say more.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
What are these numbered, right?
Are these numbered? I don't know if the Bat Relic is numbered, but it is obviously limited because it's autograph card.
Yeah, what I would hang on. Let me see.
Oh,
what,
so it's a the... it's a piece of game used bat and on card auto both.
Yeah, yes. I believe.
Really, I'll show you on like, the screen.
Yeah, can you
game show? Used bat top certified autograph issue? So the autograph is right on the Bat Relic.
I see.
And the rest of the card looks like it's on a wood grain.
I'm not a huge fan of that card, to be honest.
Well, this
that, that looks actually. Like a white. That looks like a white bat. Why is it?
Why is the relic well, it's white? It's a relic. Yeah, it's probably the inside.
Yeah, I'm gonna say somebody overpaid for that. Okay. Really overpaid.
$750 You said.
Yep.
I'm gonna say under. I don't know if how hot bat relics are. I think it's still. Yeah, I don't think people are gonna be all over these bat relics yet, or maybe ever. I'm gonna say under.
Okay. The answer is under $554. Someone paid $554 for it. Yeah. So there you go. Another point for Johnny. All right. Second one. Second last one. Sorry. 2024 Top Series 1 Shohei Ohtani. The Superstar Blueprint, you know, the blueprint inserts, autograph card numbered to 10. All right.
Whoa.
$1,000.
Is that the card that you got? But that you got the non-auto one.
The non-auto, which is worth $4. Yeah, that's the one I got.
Okay. I think I'm getting this game. It's like two checks of hype. Yeah. That has to be over. It's over. Like I mean, like somebody overpaid for it. Mm. Everybody overpaid.
$1,000.
Let me see if I can put it up.
Shohei Ohtani, like auto is, you know, pretty sought after. Number to 10.
It's a nice looking card too.
Yeah.
Insert.
I like it.
Sticker auto.
Oh,
sticker auto.
Ooh, sticker auto.
But it's nicely positioned. They almost created a spot for the sticker. You know what I mean?
Oh,
in the bottom right corner.
That's for Shohei's standard. That's a pretty ugly auto. I'm gonna say under. The auto looks ugly, and it's sticker.
Okay, so Hyung says over. John says under. The it last sold for $1,150.
So oh,
damn. You know what I don't get about these Superstar Blueprint? Like it's numbered to 10, so there are different parallels. But they all look the same. Like they I don't know how you.
It's the worst.
How do you differentiate the parallels other than the
you
number?
Know what? I hate that about Tops. Like they do that with Stadium Club. Like I've seen an Ohtani Stadium Club auto,
right?
And
yeah,
somebody's
yeah, you're
asking
right.
like a pretty high amount, and then the foil out of all things are the only difference, and it's a different number. And you're just yeah. like, it looks like the same thing as the base. Like why would I spend, you know, so 100% much more?
100% true.
Yeah, yeah. It's they got to do something. But anyways.
All right, last one. We're going back to Eli De La Cruz. His 2024 Top Series 1, 1989, another insert card, red parallel rookie card auto, number to 25. Okay? 2000.
Jeez.
2000, a red, 1989.
Yep.
And then the Volpe, one of one, sold for 70. I gotta say it's under. This is the best hobby logic. If this is over,
I gotta this, say under. This has to be under. Because if it's over, that's some sort of idiot that
got that card. Hey, he might be listening to this podcast, okay?
Sorry, man.
Yeah, that was dumb.
What did I say the number? 2000, right?
2000.
$2,000. That's crazy. I'm leaving.
The correct answer is under. It's 1500. Okay. So I'll pay 1500 for it.
Wow, holy cow.
Lot. Still a lot. Yeah.
Still a lot.
I'd rather have the Volpe 101 for $750.
Me
for
too.
Sure.
Me too.
It is a color match. Come on.
It
you know how
I'm a
sucker
match.
For it's color
nice.
Match.
On card auto.
On card auto. Yeah. Nice. Yep.
It's a nice $1,500.
Nice action shot. You have him running the bases.
It looks somewhat centered.
Mm-hmm. It's a good
looks
card.
Like it's yeah, good condition too. But it's the red. Those reds are numbered out of 25. That always bugged me.
That's true.
Like for
as
me,
well.
It's like I wish it was at a five, then it could kind of make more sense. But
yeah.
The Reds at a 25, just not a fan of it.
Yeah. I hate when they're I hate when they're inconsistent like that across products.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, that's the segment. That's another round of over-under. We'll do it again in a future episode. Okay, let's end off our episode with our weekly regular segment we call Pick One. And this is when each of us, we choose two cards or two players, and then we debate which one we would rather invest in. All right. Hyung, I know you're looking for one before the show. Did you find one?
I did. Get one.
Okay.
So basically, the two hot players in 2024 right now is kind of like Ohtani and Soto, new teams, right? So we're going to go rookie cards, though. Now that price is kind of – like Soto's market was soft. It's picking up a lot this spring, obviously, with the New York hype. Yep. And Shohei is just Shohei. Mm-hmm. Shohei's market's always crazy. But would you rather have we're going to go with, for Shohei Ohtani, 2018 Bowman Chrome Blue Refractor PSA 9. Okay.
Say that again?
And a Bowman Chrome.
Yeah.
The batting, Blue Refractor, PSA 9.
Okay.
No. Just okay. Blue Refractor.
Just the Blue Refractor PSA 9.
Yeah.
I don't have the price, but it was... $3,500 our best offer, but it was sold February 15th. So we could 130 point that quick too. But I'm going to pair that up with a 2018 Topps update, Juan Soto Black, numbered to 67, a PSA 9 for $3,200. So let's just say it's $3,200 across the board for both cards. Are you going to go with the Juan Soto Topps Update Black, numbered to 67, PSA 9? Or Shohei Ohtani Bowman Chrome Blue Refractor to 150, PSA 9?
Oh, Blue Refractor is numbered to 150, yeah, right?
Yeah, it's numbered to 150.
Okay.
In the Bowman Chrome batting image.
Go ahead, Johnny.
I'm gonna go with what I think is the collector's choice, and I have to say the Juan Soto. The paper black 67. Maybe not as much anymore, but from 2018, 2019, that was like a revered paper parallel 67, right? With the Independence Day. So for Juan Soto collectors, and there's still a lot of old school, a lot of the newer kids that are, getting into it now, they're probably not looking at Juan Soto, but a lot of the people who collected Juan Soto from the beginning, similar like Acuna collectors who held onto their cards, I think the 67 is still such a monstrously grail card for many people in terms of Juan Soto cards. And in the Bowman Chrome on the flip side for Shohei, I don't think it's on the higher end of the list as much as the Black 67. So I think the collector's choice is going to be the, maybe not the player, but yeah, Juan Soto 67, probably not as hyped as Shohei. So I'm sure the pricing potential might have a bit more. So yeah, Juan Soto for me.
Yeah, so it's $3,200 for the Black and then $3,000 for the Blue. Of the Bowman Chrome.
3,000.
Okay. So that would be your buy-in price.
Good comparison.
Oh, that's... Man. I don't know. I feel like it's so hard to go against Shohei for anything these days.
Can't blame you.
It's just,
the
like...
shininess is just like luring him.
I can't avert my eyes.
The rings.
Yeah, exactly. So I, even though it's a higher number and, you would think it's just going to go down at some point, but Shohei has been bucking the trend over the last two seasons now, and I'm, I have a bunch of Shohei watch on my watch list and I can't pull the trigger because they're all going over then, what I'm hoping that it would drop to, And so I think we're going to continue to see that trend, to tell you the truth, even as he, is not going to pitch this season, but I think the hype of playing for the Dodgers and,
totally.
He'll continue to mash. I'm 100% way more bullish on Shohei. And then, you know, Juan Soto's going to have his inevitable slow start. And so I'll wait for, you know, to pick his card up in May, June, when right before he starts picking it up again in the summer. Shohei for me.
That's a good point. Like, guys, Juan Soto is a very slow starter. I'm just every saying. Year. His every cards would be bonkers if he was a hot starter. Because by the time he heats up, the hype in baseball just dies down to the point where his cards just sit sideways, right?
Padres already eliminated from the playoffs. Like, it's all meaningless at bats.
Yeah, like, well, that's like Shohei too. But yeah, Shohei's like a unicorn, right? Protect that man at all costs. No, but I'm actually siding with John on this one. Like, Soto Black is like for me, I remember when, even in 2018, 2019, like, that was a very sought after card.
Huge.
You can't find, you don't even see them. Like, you don't see Acuña Black surfacing. Obviously, now that the marketplace is so much more volatile, you'll see them more on eBay because people, you know, are trying to trade them away. But back then, when there wasn't an active marketplace for these high, high end cards where, you know, you probably didn't see any sold for, the only deals were private, right? Because you had collectors selling to other collectors that were after those cards, right? So, and I just love, like, I think Black out of 67 has a rich history because Trout sales have previously, you know, set that standard of there are legs and tops updates still. I remember Juan Soto's Platinum did sell for, I think it was $42,000. So I think there's a lot of legs in Black. That's probably one of the most sought after parallels in paper. I would even put it above Independence Day for just in terms of classic that holds value. Obviously, clear acetate is kind of like really rare, but again, it's I would say Black is even highly more desired than a clear acetate or a camo. Father's Day, Mother's Day. Like, Black is the best, one of the best parallels, paper parallels.
And 2018 so, Black is on.
2018 Black, yeah, exactly. 2018 in general, their color parallels were unreal. That Juan Soto Black does stand out. I'm going to go the Black Soto as well for 3,000.
All right. Soto wins. There you go. Good one. John, you got one?
Yeah. So we're going to, you know, obviously going to pick hockey, and we're going to go the two most hyped players this season. One is our hometown boy, Austin Matthews. His Future Watch Auto PSA 10 recently at auction sold for $6,300 USD. He's sitting at 51 goals in, I don't know, 53 games or 54 games. You know, on pace for 75. I don't think anybody really believes he's going to get there, but yeah, I don't know. Could he break 70? That'd be crazy. This was a card a month ago that you could have got at auction for 4,300. So it's shot up, obviously, big time. And I'm going to pair that up with a future card that's not out yet. You guys obviously know where I'm about to go. Connor Bedard, Future Watch Auto. Not graded. So I know Roy in our chat group, he had mentions that he saw people, and I could be completely wrong. I apologize, Roy, if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I heard Roy said people were thinking it's going to be about $5,000 to $7,000 raw, the Bedard Future Watch Auto, as it comes out. So assuming it's out now and you can get your hands on one of the two, Austin Matthews PSA 10 Future Watch Auto, $6,000 versus Connor Bedard raw. And you know, you don't have to, we can say like came out of a pack right now, like, you know, right. Probably has a decent shot at getting a
and
good
grade. And Austin Matthews is a PSA 10?
Is a PSA 10. So let's say both are $6,000.
Sure. Easy. Austin Matthews, I'm not saying it because I'm a Maple Leafs fan, but I think the goal scoring pace is legit. That hype could drive value, right? But even more than that, the 5,000 to 6,000, if that's the estimated price tag for Connor Bedard raw future watch SP Authentic, it's just super overvalued. Like, I don't want to buy that card when it first comes out. You know, like, I was just looking at Connor McDavid. You know, his card is not much more than that graded for a future watch SP Authentic. Do I think Bedard is better than McDavid? No, I don't, right? So I think it's all hype on Bedard. You know, obviously people are paying for the potential and the hype right now. I'm not one of those guys. So I'm going Austin Matthews all the way, and it's a PSA 10. That's an extra bonus as well. So yeah.
I'm going to agree with Clark. I think you look at Ovechkin type players, McDavid, their future watch auto PSA 10s, you know, 15 grand, probably more at peak when the hype was there. So for me, Austin Matthews at 6K, honestly, that's not a bad long-term investment in my opinion. Like, especially at the rate he's going, it's kind of ridiculous. Like, this is kind of generational. Like he's ahead of Ovechkin in terms of his pace. So for me, it's mind-blowing at what we're seeing, you know. And, you know, Connor Bedard, I believe he is a generational talent too. But, you know, again, he's young. He still has to perform, you know, and there's a lot of work to do. And initially, it's overhyped. I think like 5,000 for Raw is like pretty aggressive for Connor Bedard. Because like I said, I'm seeing even if I purchase that Austin Matthews, I think if he continues this pace at the right time, that is a $15,000 card. So for me, it's like I know that PSA 10 can grow because as long as Austin Matthews keeps doing what he's doing, like that, and I believe he will. That's why it's not like I don't believe in Austin. It's like this guy's generational, man. This guy's doing it like pretty ridiculous what he's doing this year. So. I'm going to go Austin Matthews.
Man, I thought I could get you guys. Could not. You know what? For the thing with Bedard is in the hockey market right now, everybody wants him. Like, everybody wants Connor Bedard. You know the SSP? I don't even know if it's SP. The SP.
Like SP PSA 10.
The draft race. Yeah, crazy. Like, I thought that card was going to drop to like 100. It's still staying so strong.
And 5, that just shows. The PSA 10s are super rare.
Rare.
Yeah.
Right.
PSA 10,
yeah.
Right.
The gem rate on those are like brutal.
The gem rates are brutal.
Yeah. But that card, even raw, it's still
healthy. Yeah.
So healthy. And I that just shows how many people are just all over Bedard. Like, they, you know, I don't see him on generational level like McDavid, but there are many hockey fans that do. And that's the thing about the Future Watch card. I think this is not as easy as I thought. Like, I mean, I'm going to take the conservative answer and try to be the smart one here, like you guys picked. I think Austin Matthews, as hyped as it is, it has gained 2 grand in value over the last month. But if he's got a shot at 70, I think that could grow even further in this single season. So I don't know. It's still hard because I don't know. I think the Connor Bedard cards can go bonkers because just so many people want it, and there's just not going to be enough of them to go around. So I'm still picking Austin Matthews, but I don't know. I think Bedard is just one of these ones. Because it's not like the Wemby. There's not a ton of Bedard card options out there versus the Wemby, right? Mm-hmm. So every, you know, hockey collector is going to go after singular cards of Bedard. So I don't know. Might regret it, but it's a sweep for Austin Matthews.
I thought he was like, I'm going to go with Bedard.
Yeah. The classic John line.
After all that. Oh, man. All right. This is going to be anticlimactic. I should go first next time because the first, you know, I was going to do a Soto versus Shohei, and then I'm like, damn, Young took Shohei. Oh, Soto versus
sorry,
Shohei.
Man.
And then I got a Bedard one next. I'm like, oh, what the heck? So while you're explaining your choice, I'm like desperately looking for my third option, but I can't find one. So you know what? Whatever. It's a Bedard special, okay? Pick one Bedard special.
Let's do it. That's great. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So the SP where he's doing the number one draft pick, like we were just talking about, this PSA 10 sold for about $5,000. So
holy,
and I did an IG reel on it. So when it first came out, it went as high as $12,000. So and then there was a few $10,000 sales. So, and this is all within like 2.5 months. So it's come down 50% to $5,000, which is still a lot. Exactly like we were talking about. So you're gonna get that card or the Ovechkin Young Guns PSA 10, which was $5,000, but it's dropped down to about $4,000 now for last sold in February, right? So I don't know if it's because, you know, I also did a IG reel on Ovechkin a week ago because I looked at his numbers. It looks like on his pace, because he's having a down season in terms of goals, it looks like he has to play 3 more seasons to reach Gretzky, right? If you're keeping this year's pace, right? So, you know, we were talking about before seasons, like, oh, 2 more seasons, he's got it. It looks like unless he turns it up, it's going to take 3 more years when he's 41 years old. So maybe that's why it's dampening his Young Guns value. But $4,000, let's say, for Ovechkin's Young Guns PSA 10, which has a pop count of about 1,200 versus Bedard's SP Upper Deck, where he's holding the puck with the number one sign. PSA 10 going for $5,000. I'm not sure what the pop count is on that.
Here, let me just quickly. That's going to be my decision maker. Let me just check the pop count. 0417.
Bedard's Young Guns is not out yet, right? It's coming soon.
No, it's it's not out yet.
Is so it this, series two?
I have to assume series two.
24. The pop count for PSA 10 is 24.
Yeah, I'm going with Connor Bedard. Like, that's exactly what I thought. No, because for me, it's like, at the end of the day, Ovechkin is a base, Young Guns. Mm-hmm. And as we had this conversation, you know, a lot of times, it's like, we were buying Young Guns too. I've had a McDavid Young Guns. I remember it going from 2000 to 3000 to 5000 to 6000 back to 4000. And it's just like, man, I see that same thing happening. Ovechkin, we experienced it last year when, you know, he was scoring all those goals. There was a big Ovechkin boom. So for me, I think there's going to be other times where you could buy Ovechkin when price is correct because the pop count's so high. But pop 24, first card, it looks like there's not too many more surfacing in terms of they're just pumping these out on, you know, the PSA 10 oven. So it's like, yeah, I'm going to go Connor Bedard just based on the pop count. And like I said, if you know, the right marriage of timing and, you know, supply demand, I think you'll really win with the Bedard over the Ovechkin.
Okay. And just a couple more data points. At its peak, the Ovechkin Young Guns PSA 10 sold for just over $8,000. And like I mentioned, the Bedard 2.5 months ago sold for $12,000 at its peak.
Oh, man. So the Bedard is kind of a funny card because, you know, once the Young Guns comes out and then the SP Authentic comes out, I think it's going to go to third in terms of, I mean, traditionally it should go to third in terms of chase, right? It's SP Authentic first, Young Guns second, and then whatever third. This is technically the first Bedard Upper Deck card. So it's the first, happens to be an SP. Mm-hmm. And it happens to be very poorly packaged or, you know, poor quality coming out of fresh packs. So I don't know how many PSA 9s there are. I think there are pretty decent
262.
Amount, right?
So it's pretty short printed regardless.
Regardless, it's more short printed. So
it's super short printed, I would say. I would consider it super short printed, yeah.
Total population right now is about 574, it says on Card Ladder.
Yeah.
So that's a lot. Pop 24, that's a really low gem.
That's insane. So this card, you know, if this was like a Young Guns and it eventually had a PSA 10 pop of like 750 to 1500, mm-hmm. you know, this is one of those volatile cards I think that could go drop big time. The saving grace is the fact that there's no PSA 10s around. And I'm sure the people that have them right now are holding them forever. And then on the other side, you got Ovechkin. Oh, man, it's hard because the Ovechkin at $4,000, I don't really see that coming down. So if you're going to be the safe play, and then Ovechkin going to beat the Gretzky record, yada yada yada, I can see such great arguments about the Ovechkin, but I don't know, man. I think Young Guns are might be a hot take, but I think Young Guns are overrated. I'll buy a lot because I can't
not
believe.
A hot take, I don't think.
Yeah, like maybe in the hockey world, it's a bit hot take, and there's a lot of Young Gun fans that are screaming at the, you know, at the recording right now. But you know, Young Guns is it's kind of like a base card. I can't believe like a PSA 10 of anybody Young Guns is going for like thousands of dollars. That seems a bit absurd for me. But long winded answer. I'm still kind of undecided. You know what? I'm gonna. I was actually gonna pick Ovechkin, but I'm gonna change my mind. I'm gonna roll the dice with Young. That pop count is kind of juicy. I'm gonna say the hockey world is still gonna think of this as the first card. It's gonna hold some sort of sentiment, and in the fact that it's SP and the gem rate is so low, I think the PSA 10s could hold decent value. So let's roll the dice.
So you're going for Bedard? Okay.
I am.
Oh man.
Clark, man, this is a good one. I'm glad you kept it. It's a good one.
Stuck with it? Yeah. What bothers me is the value of the PSA 10. It is not worth $5,000, right? It's not worth $5,000. I don't think it's worth, even with the 24 pop count, I was just checking PSA 9 values for both, okay? So PSA 9 of the Bedard.
Way lower, SP, probably.
$995, right? Versus, so $1,000. Versus the PSA 9 of the Ovechkin Young Guns is last sold for $1,005. So same price.
So question then, because I think I know the answer for all three of us. If the Future Watch Raw is $5,000, I think we're all picking the Future Watch Raw.
Right.
So maybe we're underestimating the price of the Future Watch coming out. Because if this card is $5,000, and most people are going to pick the Future Watch, what is the Future Watch going to be at when it comes out?
Something crazy. Yeah. Right? Something crazy.
Maybe it's not $6,000. Maybe it's $7,000. Maybe it's $8,000.
I do think that this card, the PSA 10, is different than any other card, though. Like, it's like there's an asterisk.
I think
it will hold its value because of
the low pop count?
The rarity. Yeah. It's like less than 5% gem rate. You know, and for me, it's like that SP Authentic still is there's a lot out there. So the supply demand is way like different, right? So I think it will still hold the $5,000 over like a Raw. You know what I mean?
You're talking about SP Authentic Future Watch Auto, right? So it's
$999. Future Watch Auto. Yeah. To $999 versus 2024.
Right. For PSA 10.
PSA 10 specifically, yeah.
I actually believe this SP card, Bedard, should drop well below $3,000. I think it should. And that's the risky part because it could also go up. I mean, not by a lot, because I think once the Young Guns and the SP Authentic come out, it's going to start to take the sale out. But it's that pop count, the gem rate is what got me. That's the only saving grace for this card, that gem rate.
Okay, I'm going to decide. This is a big one. It's taking a lot longer than I. I'm going Ovechkin. Ovechkin is the answer. I just can't believe that this SP Connor Bedard card
will
continue to go up. I think it went from 12 to 5. I think it'll go down to, I'm going to say it's going to go down to 2,000, to 2,500.
I can see that.
Another 50% more to drop.
I can see
and,
that.
And I think. The Young Guns for Ovechkin, I think it's kind of bottomed that out right now around 3 to 4K. I think that's a good number for, and I also agree that Young Guns it's a glorified base card. I'm not a huge fan of Young Guns, but people love Young Guns. I think there's this healthy demand for Young Guns rookie cards of superstar hockey players. So I think that's why it's going to stabilize there. And then when we get closer to the goal, because, you know, Ovechkin's not going to retire until he breaks Gretzky's record, right? I think it might be a small bump from that point on. So there's room to go a bit back up, whereas I just feel like there's another 50% drop coming for the Bedard SP. So Ovechkin it is, but The damn PSA 10 gem rate.
The gem rate's killer.
I could totally be wrong. I could see it. I could see it being totally wrong as well, but only time will tell. We'll see what happens. All right. Thanks again for all our listeners and subscribers. We appreciate you guys. If you haven't rated us yet and you enjoyed the show, we would love for you to give us 5 stars wherever you listen to your podcast. And we'll have a brand new show for you next week. Talk to you then. Bye. Hey, thanks for listening to Cards to the Moon. We'd really appreciate you subscribing to our podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. And you can also connect with each of us on Instagram at 5cardguys, or you can follow Hyung at Integrity Sports Cards, or John at TradeU at Recess. You can also check us out at 5cardguys.com. Thanks again, and hope to connect soon.